Okay, so I'm here with Eric and Kevin.
Hello.
It's me, Joe. And we're going to talk about Eric and his testimony, how he came to Christ, what's happened since then, and what he's doing now.
Sounds good. Let's let it rip.
Let it rip?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good.
So where do we start? I thought you were going to do your, I thought you had something on tap.
Oh, no. Not this time.
For Eric?
It's all about Eric tonight.
All about Eric. Okay.
Yeah.
Start from the beginning, Eric.
All right, let's go.
Welcome to This Joe Show. On today's episode, Eric battled ice cream addiction and was the original Neo Xenos kid. Born and raised in the church, there were bumps along the way. Now he's learning to lead a family of his own.
For the first time in my life, I think I understood, like, oh, I'm a sinner, and this is why I'm feeling so guilty. I need forgiveness. I get it now. I get why Jesus needed to die on the cross for my sins. I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Didn't know that, did you, Kevin?
I did not actually know.
Didn't know that? I'm actually from Cincinnati.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm a little bit of a Cincinnati Reds fan.
Yeah?
A little bit. Not...
Got the Indians hat on.
Yeah, I got the Indians hat on right now. I was born in Cincinnati.
What year?
1981.
Ew.
I'm on the cusp of Gen X millennials. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right on the cusp.
We're going to edit the shit out of this now. They have like a micro generation, Xennials.
Okay.
You grew up in an analog environment, and then as you were still growing up, the transition happened to digital, where like, but this one, the descriptions are like you grew up, you know, with a VCR and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But you're comfortable with iPad now. So anyway, Xennial.
That's you too, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm 82.
Not Kevin, though.
No, I'm 88. What am I?
You're millennial.
Millennial, yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I was born in Cincinnati. All my family lives in Cincinnati, except my dad was from Germany. They all migrated to Cincinnati.
Tom is from Germany.
Yeah, he's from Germany, actually.
Are you just finding out stuff you didn't know?
I didn't know any of this, yeah.
Yeah, he was born in Germany. So, but anyway, so all my family's in Cincinnati, Ohio. When I think I was around 7 or 8, ended up moving up to Cleveland Heights, Ohio. My parents lived in Columbus before they moved back to Cincinnati and had me. They got involved with Xenos in Columbus, and where my mom became a believer, at one point some of their best friends were going to be planting a church up in Cleveland. I think they talked to them. They had looked for a church in Cincinnati and never really found one that they were thrilled about, that they just fell in love with Xenos.
Yeah.
And so they were like, all right, yeah, let's move to Cleveland. And I think it worked out with my dad's job. And so they ended up moving up to Cleveland when I was like 7 or 8, I think, to Cleveland Heights, Ohio.
Yeah. And at 7 or 8, are you jazzed about moving to Cleveland? Can you remember?
All the stories true that you heard about.
I remember it was very different because Cincinnati was like very suburban, typical suburban. And then Cleveland Heights is very different. You know, it's like old parts of Cleveland. And
yeah.
So I remember it being like, this is different. This is kind of weird. It's very diverse.
From 7 or 8, you're raised in Xenos then. You're raised in the church, the early Neo-Xenos church.
Yeah.
What was that like?
I remember... there was this big old house they had where they had the meetings. I remember it was a big part of my parents' life. I mean, we were always going over there, probably for home church and, you know, central teaching and stuff like that. And it was smaller, and I remember there were some characters and stuff like that. And I remember Dennis McCallum coming up with his kids, and some of his kids were like around my age. So there wasn't a lot of other kids my age involved in the church at that point. So I remember being really excited to have some other kids my age to play with and stuff like that. So that was cool. I don't know. I remember it being a big part of my parents' life, and this is what we did. And I don't know. I remember thinking it was pretty cool. I didn't really think much of it being pretty young. Later on, Keith got involved.
At what point do you start to get interested spiritually?
It moved from Cleveland Heights, and it moved to Bedford. And I remember being in junior high, and at that point, they start talking about maybe doing like a youth group with me and maybe some of my friends. And that was exciting because it was like, it was always the adults thing. But then at that point, it was like, well, it's going to be kind of my age group. So I remember at that point, I started getting interested. There was a while where I felt like it was just my parents' church. I'm just going to my parents' church. But when they did that, I was like, okay, this is cool. Something I can invite my friends to. And I was pretty excited about it. So that's when I started getting interested and like,
what age
was this? Junior high. I think they started doing like a little youth group thing.
Were you still, meeting at that weird house?
Yeah, that weird house in Bedford.
Whose house was this?
It was like a big old weird house, yeah. Whose house?
Yeah, I don't know.
It was the church building. So it was like a big house.
Gotcha.
On Solon Road.
But nobody lived there.
Nobody lived there. So the first floor was big and pretty open, and that's where the church would meet.
Huh. Yeah, it was a big old house. It was like a huge house. So they had like tons of bedrooms upstairs so like the little kids could meet up there. It was fun. I remember at some points when they would let us all go over there, we'd run around the house. And
okay, so your friends start coming in junior high. You start to get interested.
Yep. Yeah, I start getting interested. Started inviting friends. I remember it being really exciting because it was like my friends and I think some other guys got involved. I think maybe Lauren at that point. So early on, I remember Mark Michalek. I think he got involved early on. He was one of my good buddies. Kind of lived in the neighborhood. We rode the bus together.
So you brought Mark around.
Well, we had a buddy, Tom. They both started coming around.
Who was leading it?
I think Rick Yorger. Keith, maybe early on.
Yeah.
Or maybe Keith didn't. I don't know. Rick Yorger was definitely, I remember him being involved. Terry Lesnick, some cool dudes. I really give it to those guys. They took a lot of crap from junior high boys.
At what point do you make the decision to receive Christ? Do you remember that?
So this has been going on for quite a few years. It like bled over into high school, and then it was even getting bigger at this point. I think guys like Lee Brooks were involved. He was in like junior high. So they had like Lauren's age almost. So it was like there was like almost a junior high and a high school thing going on. And it was like we did some stuff together, but it was sort of separate. And so I was reaching out to some friends. Bedford's kind of a blue collar, rough town. And some of the guys I was hanging out with were pretty rough. They introduced me into like drinking and other things. I was like reaching out to them, but they were more probably reaching out to me than I was reaching out to them. Even though like they came to Bible study quite a few times, it was definitely me being pulled more into that life.
Yeah, honey dick.
Yeah. Yeah, I got dragged down. So on the one side, I was like going to church and doing the youth group. But on the other hand, I was like messing around doing stupid stuff with these guys, with some of my friends. I was like pretty conflicted. Like I knew like, oh, this is messed up. You know, I was starting to feel like pretty guilty. I was getting into like drinking and all this other stuff.
What age was this? This is high school now?
Yeah, this is high school. I don't think I was quite driving yet, but a few of the other people were all driving and some of my friends. So it was like right around 16.
Okay, so you're like 15, 16. 15, and you're drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Ooh. Messed up. I mean, it was like I hung out with a couple of the guys who were older and stuff, so they were 16, 17, maybe even some of them were 18. They were definitely some of like the cool kids, I guess. And it was like I got kind of pulled into their life, even though I was like reaching out to them too. So they kind of reached out to me too and pulled me down into it. And I remember feeling really guilty because there was quite a few times I think I went home. I was drunk, I think, or at least close to it, not feeling right. But I remember walking in the house and my dad going, "What are you guys doing? What's up?" And I'm like, "Oh, nothing, not doing anything." Yeah. Feeling like really guilty. That was like the first time in my life where I was like, because my parents, they were like really loving, good parents. And it was like, this is messed up, man. I was feeling bad. That went on for a while. And then I want to say we went on a big like youth retreat camp out. And somehow we joined up with Columbus Enos. So it was huge. It was fun. I was really excited about it. I was definitely like feeling guilty. I was two-faced, you know, to my Christian friends. I was one way. And then hanging out with these other guys. Keith kind of pulled me aside at one point during that camp out. I don't know if it was like Friday night or Saturday night. He totally knew what I was into. And I remember at the time even thinking like, how the heck does he know what is going on? But he knew exactly what was going on. He basically challenged me like, are you saved? Talk to me about kind of what was going on. And it kind of shook me up because it was like, I already knew this is messed up. I know this isn't right. And he was like, he explained the gospel to me and he's like, you're a sinner and you need Jesus. I thought about it that night and I was pissed. I remember being really upset that he talked to me about it. But then later laying in bed thinking like, oh my God, he's so right. This makes so much sense. For the first time in my life, I think I understood like, oh, I'm a sinner. And this is why I'm feeling so guilty. I need forgiveness. I get it now. I get why Jesus needed to die on the cross for my sins. Like, it just made sense. So I remember praying in my bed that night, like, I get it, Lord. I need your forgiveness. I'm a sinner. Because I'd heard the gospel so many times before, but I don't know why. I just clicked. It made sense, you know, at that point. So I remember doing that at the camp. It wasn't immediately, but it was like that.
Oh, so you're still at the camp.
Yeah, yeah.
In your bed at the camp.
Yeah, it was like late that night. I think I was laying in bed still thinking about it.
That's cool. Where was the camp?
I don't remember.
Oh.
I don't know. I have like a terrible memory for this stuff. But it was kind of a foggy camp because I went into it and then kind of left out of the camp becoming a believer.
That's awesome. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter where.
Yeah, I remember that super clear. Yeah, and Keith cornered me and totally busted me. And I'll never forget that. You know, it's like,
were you saved at that point?
That's a good question, because I'll never forget this one moment when I was like real little, probably like around 10 years old. I remember this like old red Corsica my dad had, Chevy Corsica with like the red felt like interior. I don't know. I remember being really little, sitting in the back of that thing and them explaining like the gospel and Jesus loved me. And I remember sitting there going like, yeah, I definitely want him in my heart, you know? And I remember that really clearly. It's one of those, like, sometimes it's hard to say.
Sure.
It definitely, I know after that camp and talking with Keith, laying in bed and talking to God and, you know, asking for forgiveness, at that point it clicked. It just made sense. Yeah. I was like, this totally makes sense. I will say after that, you know, and then several weeks after that, I was like, I love the Lord. I get it. I'm a sinner. It changed. It was like, at that point, I want to know the Lord more. I want to know.
Really?
Yeah. Like, this is serious. But it was like to the point where I was like loving going to cell group. I was loving going to Bible study and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think I remember started separating myself from some of these guys that were like really bad news and trying to pull me down into that lifestyle. I wanted to be more involved with my other guys who were Christians. I think Mark might have been a Christian at that point. There was a couple core guys that were getting involved. And I was like, I wanted to hang out with them more. I wanted to hang out with Rick Yorger and those guys who are teaching us in the cell group. I feel like I didn't have this crazy experience, but that at that point in my life, it started making sense. It's like, that's the way I would describe it. It's like, oh, this is who God really is. And I don't know, at that point, I'm like, yeah, definitely. I want to know more and be more involved. And then I'll never forget too, but I was playing baseball and I was doing that. It was pretty intense because I played all year and then I played all summer. And it felt like a lot of my time was being taken up with baseball. And I told my dad, I'm like, I want to focus on going to church, the youth group and stuff like that. Because it just felt like I was constantly missing things because of baseball or whatever else. And I told my dad, I'm like, I'm quitting. I'm not going to play baseball. I'm just going to be involved with the youth group and work or whatever. And it was really hard. That took a lot to be like, finally be like, Dad, I don't want to do that. You know, I really want to be involved with the youth group. Because I was so excited. Right. I didn't want to have to miss it or anything like that. So, yeah.
Super cool. Could have been an Indian by now.
My shoulder doesn't seem to have ever held up.
Well, you're 38 now.
Yeah, that's true.
You're a waiting Indian, for sure.
Yeah, you'd be retired at this point. I remember you growing up playing baseball. There was a year where you're like on the powder blue team.
Okay.
Oh, and I'm like, these fuckers, man, come in here throwing smoke. You know, they're like 13, trying to hit a baseball. You got Eric's like 6 foot tall firing a baseball at you left-handed.
Was that the same year? I think Dale Ritwidge was on.
I was just going to say, Dale Ritwidge. This kid, Dale Ritwidge, could throw like 70, 75 miles per hour when we were like 12.
Dude was original Danny Almonte.
It was terrifying. Yeah. Terrifying.
I remember, I think we won that year. Yeah. Because we had me and him pitching and a couple other good guys. Yeah. Yeah, we were like, that was fun. That was a fun year. With my blonde mullet coming out of my hat.
Did you really have a mullet?
Yeah, I did.
That's funny.
It was a white because I had super blonde hair.
It's like the most 90s thing of all time. Yeah. Brian Bosworth hair.
Okay, so then after high school, you move into a ministry house. Just talk about that. First ministry house.
Yeah, it was first ministry house, I guess, technically up at Kent State. Yeah, so there was like a few of us.
It was you, Eric Cannell, and Mark Michalak.
Yep.
You three. And you were at the Eagles Landing Apartments?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We were going off to college, and I don't know how it all came about, but they're like, let's do a college group thing. I'm like, okay, this sounds awesome. I remember Keith was involved, Greg, a bunch of the elders. It was really exciting to be like with those guys and a charge onto Kent State campus. I think Dar might have even been involved. And so we started a Bible study on their campus, and it started off really small. There was only a few of us. But then it seemed to grow really quickly. Alex Abdiyav got involved with his tight black jeans.
Alex is not here, but Alex used to wear all black. Like when I first met him, he would wear all black.
Did he have a reason?
Like black shirt, black pants, black shoes.
Very tight.
I think his reason was like style.
It was for style purposes.
It was a pretty good look.
He looked good.
Yeah.
Like
he
Russian,
good.
The Undertaker.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that was the style in Russia, so he was like coming over here, yeah.
I'm a year behind you? Is that right?
Yeah, I think a year behind me, yeah.
So I knew of you guys, and this is a lot of story, but I was dating your sister, and I knew that you guys were doing a Bible study, and I had gone to college at Youngstown State, had nothing going on, so I decided to go. And I just always remember, like, you're definitely one of the reasons that, not knowing people very well, that I'm like, I don't have anything going on, I'm going to go Bible study, but at least I know Eric's there. Like, I knew you were cool. I knew Mark. I knew you guys kind of. I didn't have anything going on. So that was really cool that you had that going on. That's my testimony.
Yeah.
You know, a group of guys that like could make relationships work and loved and cared about each other. And you guys like invited me in, which was really cool for me.
Did you go to the high school group at all?
No.
When you were dating Lauren?
No.
Yeah, no. I remember that. I remember it was really exciting because Eric Canal, he was definitely really good. He was the fun time. I mean, he was constantly like, come on, Eric, Mark, let's go over to Youngstown State and hang out with Joe. And I'd be like, heck yeah, let's go. Yeah, this will be fun. So I remember doing that, meeting up with you. Yeah, so you got involved so we started kind of that first year and it kind of grew. I think Alex got involved and some other people. And then, yeah, you got involved like that second year. We bought that house, or we got that house on Lake Street.
Lake Street.
I don't know what to say about that.
It was a derailer. Usually that adds to the moment. That destroyed the moment.
Yeah, it was the one beep.
It
should be beep, beep,
beep,
beep.
Okay. Perfect. Right. Okay.
So you were talking about Eric Canal, it was, I think.
Yeah.
So you got moved into a house on Lake Street
with
Joe.
Yeah, I think because we were in an apartment.
Never lived in the ministry house on Lake Street.
Okay. Was it weird that he was dating your sister? I don't have a sister. I don't know these things.
You know, it was weird because I left and went to Kent State, and then they started dating like his senior year. So I wasn't even around for it. So it wasn't. I'd heard, you know, obviously I knew. I'm like, oh, Joe's a cool guy. I remember he was very funny in school.
Scumbags dating my sister.
He was kind of a class clown, and I thought he was very entertaining.
Got that stupid face.
No, it was fine. And then he was, going to Youngstown, and I don't know. I thought he was a cool dude, so we would go out there and hang out and explore Youngstown. And
beautiful Youngstown, huh?
Yeah.
He was being serious saying explore Youngstown. That made me laugh on its own.
I mean, there's things to explore, like piles of rubble and
the ice castle.
Yeah, the ice castle, yeah.
I mean, I think I remember picking you up one night and we drove like the downtown area and there was nobody. It was like a ghost town. I'm like, this is kind of weird. This is kind of eerie. I remember being a little worried.
There's some places that I would recommend in the Youngstown area. Downtown Youngstown is not one of them.
So at what point did you move to Cincinnati?
Okay, so, yeah. So we got this house on Lake Street because we needed a bigger place. It was growing. The ministry was growing. I was living in a bedroom upstairs, and I was trying to go to Kent State. I was also working at the same time, and it was not going well. Like, work and school, I was like kind of failing out of school.
This is when you were the nursing assistant?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought I wanted to go into maybe nursing. I didn't know. You know, I was really kind of fluttering around, didn't know what I wanted to do. I was having a hard time getting out of my parents' house and becoming my own person, taking care of responsibilities. And I was very jealous of Mark, my clique, because he was like very independent. He had a good job. He was passing all his classes, doing really well. And not only that, he was killing it in ministry. You know, he was like, I think he was maybe starting to teach, and he was just a guy I really looked up to. And I compared myself to him. I'm like, I should be where this dude is. Me and Mark, now, you know, years back thinking about it, was really stupid because we were totally two different people. But I didn't care for who I was. I wanted to be like him, you know.
Right.
And then I wanted to be like Eric too, who was crazy and fun. And he was just, I don't know, to be around. It was like I was starting to really wallow at life. Like, I'm not like these other guys. I'm kind of a failure. And
okay, I know this story, but this actually, you're explaining it now, makes a lot of sense. I could see how living with Mark and living with Eric Canal. Yeah, Eric Canal is one of the funnest guys I've ever met in my life.
Oh, yeah. One of the...
It's an instant party.
Yeah.
Instant fun. And then Mark is like a deep thinker and a great teacher. And I could see how that would be intimidating. Not that I agree. I think that you also obviously bring a lot to the table. You can talk to just about anyone, anytime, anywhere.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, at the time, I didn't know. You know, I just looked at myself like, I have a learning disability. I suck at college. Not that all the guys were like a Mark, you know, who are just really gifted students and stuff like that. Because Eric, I think, had some struggles and stuff, too. He gave me a lot of bad advice and stuff about college. But anyway, you know, like he was working though and had a good job, and he was a pretty successful guy that way, you know, where I was like, I'm just this nursing assistant working at a hospital making, you know, not great money. And I started to get kind of bitter at God, like, this is not where I want to be. This is not who I want to be. I'm not doing well at school. I feel like I'm not going anywhere with a career. I started to kind of pull back in the ministry house for my relationships, and I started getting pretty bitter. I think I was, and it was bitterness at God, because I was like, I want to be like these other guys. I want to have these gifts, or if you can relate to that. But I was frustrated, and I wanted, you know,
I could definitely relate to that. It's easy to see other people and what they're doing and compare yourselves to them.
Yeah, which was you know, totally selfish and stuff like that, looking back. So yeah, I just kind of let that brew and brew and brew. I think at one point was like, I'm faking it in this place. I don't even want to be in the ministry house anymore. I don't even want to be involved. I was really bitter at God. So I told the guys and I was like, I don't know if I want to live here anymore. Don't want to be involved. So I think I'm going to move out. And I don't even remember how it went. I remember them being pretty upset. That's hard, you know, to hear that. And I think it was like next day or a couple days later, I was like, I got to get out of here. And I packed up and left. I think I packed up in the middle of the day when no one was home and packed all my stuff up and moved back to my parents. But yeah, so I moved back to my parents. At that point, Lauren, I think, I don't know if she was still living at home. She might have moved out by then. I think she was in like one of the girls' ministry houses. But then Andrew was at home because he was a lot younger than me. And I just felt like a real failure than being at my parents' house. It was like, man, I'm a failure to Lauren. This really sucks. So I was there for a little while working, and then I was like, I kept running away, probably running away from God. Like, so I decided,
what do you mean?
I think my parents would try talking to me about it and what I was doing. I didn't want to even talk about it. I just was kind of running away from God, I think. Okay. At that point, yeah, I don't know. It was like I just wanted to run away and not talk to God and not even be involved in any way, you know. So I don't know how it came about, but I decided to move down to Cincinnati where all my extended family is. I think it was my cousin had a landscaping company and was like, hey, what are you doing? Talk to me. And I'm like, I had done some landscaping in high school. He's like, come down. I could use a guy. I could use like a right-hand man. So I'm like, oh, okay. Man, I'll move down to Cincinnati and go work with him. So that's what I did. At that point, I just packed up, moved down to Cincinnati, and then started working with my cousin.
How'd that go?
Not well. I mean, I love my cousin, and it was like, I actually had a lot of fun working with him, and it was just me and him and maybe another like high school kid, and I just worked a lot. And at the time I was like, this is great. I can kind of numb out and just work. It's kind of a guy thing to do. So we would work sun up to sundown just about every day. That's all I did really. You know, I kind of just worked, and I'd go home, talk to my grandmother because I had moved in with my grandmother. Yeah, that was it. I was pretty much just going through the motions of life. It definitely nagged at the back of my head, like thinking about God and thinking about what was going on up at Kent. And then I think at some point I would visit periodically my parents. At one point I was visiting and she had like, I think it was like, What's So Amazing About Grace laying around. I was like, is anyone reading this?
Are you at your parents' house?
Yeah, my parents' house. Yeah. I'm like, can I borrow it? She's like, yeah, sure, take it. So I took it and I remember going back down to Cincinnati and working, and then in the evening I was starting to read that, and this is probably about a year or so had passed, and I was reading that book, and I was just, man, I remember just crying, bawling my eyes out, like, what am I doing down here? Like, I'm so stupid. Like, I'm just running away from God, and I know he just loves me and cares about me. I was like, this is dumb. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. So at one point, I think I finished the summer with my cousin, and I think I called up Mark, and I was like, hey dude, I'm coming back, can I come to home church or something? And he was like, absolutely. It was amazing. You know, I think we always expect when we come back around, like, we're gonna be scolded, like,
yeah.
And he, not at all, he was like, yeah, come on back. So I was like, okay,
cool. We've been waiting for your call.
Yeah, right. We've been waiting for you to come back. So yeah, I called him up and ended up going to home church. That was real awkward, but I was excited to be come back around. Yeah,
you spineless sack of shit. I knew you'd come back.
Everything's great. You ride off into the sunset.
No.
What happens?
It's funny, you know, you walk away from the Lord, and it's not like you just stand still. I definitely sloped back. Like, it was like I couldn't remember verses and the Bible, and so it was like a while getting back into it. And I remember being I still remember how, like, welcoming everyone was back. And I remember there was new faces, new people that had come to know the Lord. And then it was, like, really exciting to meet all these new people who had been coming around.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool to be back with you and all the guys.
How long were you gone for?
I think it was about a year and a half. And I came back for the year. And then I went back one more summer to Cincinnati. I promised my cousin I'd go back and help him. It was pretty dumb. I was gone about a year and a half, I think. Maybe 2 years. But yeah, it was like hard getting back into it, but exciting again. Like, I knew, like, the whole time I knew God loved me, and I was just pissed at him. I was mad that things just didn't go my way. So at that point, I was kind of like coming back into it, like,
so how did you, okay, you pick up the phone and you call Mark, and that's a big step, and you come back. But how did you resolve the issue you had with God?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I started coming back around, and I think once I started coming back around for a while, maybe talking to Mark, talking to guys, it started maybe making a little more sense, where I think I realized, like, I was wanting to be someone, like, that I wasn't, and that I was mad at God for that. And I started to realize, like, okay, at that point, it was like coming back in. I was pretty humbled at that point. Like, I'm an idiot. You know, I walked away from all this, and the church has continued to grow, and it was growing on Kent's campus. I think that at that point, I was like coming back in more pretty humble And then so it kind of made sense.
So Dr. Chris Baker's in the background here. He was resting, studying for LTC. He recklessly foot rest on his chair. And
just with the abandon.
Like a stampede.
Yeah, here. Sorry about that. We could edit all this out.
We can.
As if it never happened.
We won't.
How did you resolve the bitterness you had towards God? And you were explaining that.
I guess I kind of realized, like, I'm not Mark. I'm not Eric Cannell. God's kind of got me where he's got me. And he's dealing with me as an individual. It took a while, maybe coming back around, to figure that out.
Because it's funny. This whole thing is funny. Because I have those same feelings. And I look at you and I'm like, I wish that I could connect with people instantly like Eric can. So I have the same things when I look at you. Like, I wish that I had the things that you have.
Yeah.
And it's just, you could play that game all day with everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a funny thing. I think I still struggle with that, to be honest with you. Like, I think you're a really gifted teacher. And a lot of times I'm like, God, I wish I could teach like Joe. Like, it just seems so natural. It's funny how we do that, where we have all these different individuals in the body of Christ. And we're always like, I still struggle with it. But
yeah.
I'm definitely not like it was back then. Accepted, you know, who I am and the gifts that God has given me, and try to make the most of those, you know.
Yeah, so. It's always what you don't have.
Yeah, isn't it funny? Yeah, you know, like, I wish I was like that person. Instead of like just
being the best Eric you can be.
Yeah. Realizing God's given you some unique gifts, you know,
that
make you unique and able to like help out in the body of Christ.
So, well, that was it, right? You never got married or nothing like that.
Yeah.
So where'd you meet the future Mrs. Eric Shoops?
I don't remember. I think I was a year back involved with the college group at Kent. There was a girl that came around who was very attractive and seemed like a lot of fun. Maybe cut that. Cut it. Let's start over.
For sure.
It's part of the story, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. There was a girl that came around.
There was a girl.
I was like, I was single, and this girl came around and was... She actually kind of pursued me, yeah, because I was always pretty easygoing. I never really pursued girls very much. I'm like, I don't know, she seems like fun, so I started going out with this one girl. So we started dating. We dated for a little while, and I think that's at that point, that following summer, I went back to Cincinnati because I had to. I promised my cousin,
Yes, this is true.
You were dating the hot girl, and then you went down to Cincinnati.
Before I left, my sister and a few of the other girls were like, I don't know, I think she's trouble, dude. You should probably not date her anymore. And I'm like, well, I'm going to Cincinnati anyways for the summer real quick. Don't worry about it. I think when I left, I kind of realized like a lot of the girls were like, I don't know, she just doesn't seem like the right fit for you. And I'm like, okay. So I remember calling her up. I was down in Cincinnati. And I'm like, yeah, I think we need to break it off. I felt bad, but...
Very honorable way to do it.
So I ended up finishing up the summer, coming back. At that point, Amy Legat was coming around, her and Jake. I didn't know she had a sister. Her, Amy, and my sister, Lauren.
Yeah, conspired. At this time, it was a revelation that she had a sister.
Yeah, I didn't know she had a sister. And I guess they conspired, and they're like, we got to hook up Eric with my sister, with Amy's sister, Andy. And I didn't know what was going on exactly, but anyways, they conspired and they introduced us, and we hit it off. Alex, I think what was unfortunate though is like, I think we had a week or two to like hang out, and I think there was was it Labor Day camping? Yeah, right. When school starts up, Labor Day camping?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we went Labor Day camping, and one night I think we're up the fire talking. Alex was actually... Abdel was blowing things up in the fire, I remember specifically. So fireworks were going off that night. But yeah, I don't know. We hit it off, and she actually had to go back to Boston for another year to finish her last senior year of college. But we were like, is it IMing? And
oh, damn.
AOL instant messaging.
AOL, yeah, instant messaging. And
that's funny, because what I remember about this is like, she came to our group. Shout out to Andy.
Beow, beow, beow,
beow, beow, beow. But all the single guys in fellowship are like, oh, Andy. And I remember Lauren and Amy like, no.
Yeah, I remember there was quite a bit of pursuing going on. I think there was some talk that I was maybe the alpha male at this point.
A long time ago.
Yeah. Oh, where do we go from there? But yeah, we started dating. She finished her last year in Boston, and then she came back and got involved in the girls' ministry house, and we started dating and going out. I think we dated for about 2 years. That was cool, because at that point, I felt like I was starting to get through college. I was actually at Akron at that point. I remember her helping me a lot with some of the like reading class.
The
writing class.
You mean she did your writing assignments?
She helped me a lot with the writing. The only reason I have a degree today is because of my wife. Probably, I will say that. Shout out to her. So we were dating and things were going cool. The college group at that point was growing and stuff like that. I don't know. I remember that was a very fond time, dating, the dating point, Then we ended up getting married on June 1st, 2008.
Okay.
That was cool. Yeah.
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 Damn, so 11 years already?
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy. It goes fast. Around that time, I think at that point, quite a few of us had graduated college. It was like our post-college home churches were going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an interesting time. I think, like, looking back, we were trying to figure out life and working full-time jobs. And at that point, I think we were there kind of letting us go on our own a little bit. I remember Joel and Dar were involved. Yeah, we were meeting in the basement of that big apartment building.
Yeah.
Remember that? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was an interesting time. I think we were trying to figure out how to be adults and do our adult jobs and still reach out to friends and stuff like that. Yeah, we moved into a duplex. Amy and Jake lived above us. We lived below. You guys lived right across the street.
Right.
In an apartment. That was fun.
The Branches lived right next to you, or
yeah.
A couple doors down.
Yeah, the Branch. Yeah, they lived a couple doors down. They would always like come around scheming this or that. And then I think at one point Andy was like, we should try to get these kids to church. And I'm like, heck yeah, let's do that. So we invited them. That was pretty cool.
That was a cool time to like live in that little area close to each other, be able to hang out.
And then I think at one point Andy and I, we got involved with the college ministry. Like this before we had kids, but we got involved with the college group. I forget why we got pulled into it to help out. And that was like I remember that being a really exciting time for Andy and I. We still look back on that with like a lot of like, really thankful and kind of great memories to be involved with the college group. I mean, if anything, I look back and I feel like I feel lucky that I got to be a part of the early home churches that are now still,
yeah,
know, that have grown like crazy. And then we had Elliot in 2013. We were still involved in the college group. And then I don't know, I think I remember at one point, like we didn't have anything to do with them. So we just showed up with them and Carlel was given a bottle of milk. Yeah. And then I think it was shortly after that, yeah, maybe you guys should probably go back to your own age group. Because I think at that point, everyone started having kids. You guys had Mila.
Yeah.
We didn't really want to leave, but then we were kind of like, it'd be nice to be with our friends who are going through the same thing in life.
Yeah.
So that was like a really heartbreaking thing, but yet exciting to be like, okay, we're going to be leaving the college group, which we like, we so love those girls and guys. But we were kind of like, okay, this probably maybe will a good thing. We felt like we were struggling trying to figure out how to be new parents.
Yeah, it's so funny. If you have kids, you care about kids. If you don't and you're in college, you don't. Being able to have somebody that can identify with you and work through those struggles and be parents together is good.
Yeah, so we were looking for some support and we were kind of feeling like this will be a good thing. Yeah, and then we were back with our own age group for a while. And that was cool. It was like not quite as exciting as being with the college group.
You're like, it sounds like you're trying to convince yourself that it was cool.
Yeah. You know, it's hard when you get to a certain age and you're just not seeing as many people come to home church, and it's not quite like it is when you're an IP and there's constantly new people every night and stuff to do and stuff like that. So it's hard getting old, not the most exciting things all the time. Maybe you can help me out here.
I wanted to hear what struggling. You were going to say. I'm with you. It's definitely like, is a transition from certainly on the college campus. It's bustling and there's people everywhere and there's always something to do. And then you get married and you have a wife and you have a job and you're tired after your job. And then you have kids and it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
Where you can't stay up till 2 a.m. or you're going to be wrecked the next day.
Yeah.
And you certainly can't do it 2 days in a row. A lot of your ministry and your service is to your wife and to your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Extraordinarily cool and weighty, but it's not exciting a lot of times.
Yeah.
Right?
It'd
be more fun to go and, hey, let's go to Kent and there's going to be a bunch of guys there.
Yeah.
It's not fun like that.
Right.
It's different.
Yeah,
you got to put the kid to bed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you said it really well. So it's like a hard transition. You want to go do the fun stuff that you can be more free and do whatever. But yeah, with having a family and kids, it's like at that point, you know, it's like you choose to give up part of your life to like help raise this kid and love your wife or spouse and stuff like that. So shoot, Elliot's 5. He's going to be 6 this year. So we're.
Shout out Elliot.
Yeah. Shout out Elliot. So we're pretty far into it now. Yeah, so now it's like a part of life, but not that it's like we still do fun stuff, and
yeah,
it's just not like every night of the week.
I watching kids can be a bummer, like being responsible for kids. Kids for like an hour last night, I wanted to kill myself. Yeah, and yeah, you have 2 now, right? You have Ada.
We have Ada. Shout out to Ada.
Shout out Ada.
It's like two and a half almost.
I missed it.
Oh.
He's gonna beep it.
I don't know. I think we've talked about this before, me and you, Joe. There's also a cool side of it too, where when you decide to have children and and stuff like that, you're like, you're realizing that you're like giving up a part of your life. Like, you can't be as nearly as selfish anymore. Like, you have to put down your selfishness and like go help with the kids. And
yeah,
like you're saying, that's the hard part. They're intense, man. They need a lot of guidance and help. And but now I'm kind of realizing, like, okay, no, it's okay. Like, there's a part of me that I don't get to nearly go have nearly as much free time and do what I want. But there's an aspect of like, I get to give up part of my life to like help these kids and my wife. And there's some like significance to that.
So yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. It's a good way to put it. I mean, so do you want to, Eric, do you want to talk about Elliot and the challenges there, or do you prefer not to?
Yeah, I can talk about it.
Because I think that that's part of your story. Like, what is happening now? It's ongoing.
Yeah, I can try to talk about it. I'm not sure.
I mean, I think that probably a lot of people don't know too much about it. Maybe it's helpful for people to know. We're talking about kids and they're a challenge. It takes a lot of sacrifice, but it's worth it. It's awesome. Can you talk specifically about Elliot and the challenges that you've had there?
Yeah, I think there's a part where you start having children, and I remember Keith talking about this, and it's like you want to start building up your castle and protect them. You want to like, you want to tribe out at that point. I don't know, you get older and you're not meeting new people all the time. So it's like, there's this like, I got to build up my little kingdom. And I think you know where you're going in life. And then all of a sudden, Elliot turns out to have a genetic disorder. He was born, it seems like as soon as he was born, there was all these weird little things going on. Like, he was born breech with his like feet up by his face. And then he had some other issues from that, like torticollis, where his neck was real stiff. And then he like never nursed very good for Andy. She had to like really work at it. I mean, I got to give her credit. She like had it rough, but she stuck with it and was determined to like, and she really wanted to do that. But there was all these like really weird things. So he had, from that, he had some like hip dysplasia. It's like they never stopped. I think we thought like, oh, we'll get through this and then he'll be fine. And then something else would come up and we're like, that doesn't make sense. Why does he have this little medical issue now? He was always barely hitting his milestone. And we were always like a little concerned, like, what's going on here? But we were like, we always chalked it up to like, I don't know, I'm a slow learner. Or Andy, actually, I give the credit to her. She kept telling his pediatrician, something just doesn't seem right. Like, it just doesn't add up. He's got this issue. He's got this issue. His hands kind of shook. He had like little tremors. I think it was on his fourth birthday. She was telling this to the doctor and he was like, I think it kind of like dawned on him. Like, you know, I just remember reading about this one thing. Let's do a genetic test, like just a generic genetic test on him real quick. Ended up doing a genetic test. It took like weeks to get this back. It was like agonizing, actually. And the whole time I remember it was like agonizing, but then I'm like, ah, he's fine. He doesn't have anything wrong. I think.
Yeah.
I,
as a guy, like, that's your role, right? Like, ah, it'll be fine.
I remember telling Andy, oh, I'm sure it's fine. There's no way he's got, I think the doctor thought he had Klinefelter's is what he was thinking. Well, I got the call one day at work and Andy says, the doctor wants to meet us at the doctor's office. So I was like, oh geez, you know, what the heck is this? You know, if it was negative, I'm sure he would have called us and be like, yeah, everything's good, don't worry. But we were like, oh, we're going to need you to come into the office. So yeah, he told us he has a genetic disorder and it wasn't actually Klinefelter's, it was actually worse. You know, a normal male has 46 chromosomes, or a normal human has 46 chromosomes. Well, he has 48, and our sexual, it has to do with the sexual chromosome. A healthy man has XY, and a woman has YY.
Mm-hmm.
He actually has 48 chromosomes, and it's XXYY. So he's got like duplicate, two of each that he, of two that he shouldn't have. So it's basically like when the first few cells were forming to create who he was, those two XYs that should have gone over here went over here.
Okay, so what does that mean for you guys? What does that mean for him?
I guess the easy one for me to talk about first is, for us, it kind of like shook us up.
I think part of it is you don't know what it means.
Yeah. There's quite a spectrum, or there's quite a like a lot of things it could mean. It's pretty rare. He seems to be on the healthier side, thank God. Like, there's not any major things right now. Just a lot of stuff we got to keep an eye on. He does therapy and a lot of different stuff like that. Yeah, we don't know. We don't really know what it can mean, a lot of different things.
So we're talking about Elliot, but let's talk about you. How are you handling all of this?
You know, it's like, it's always at first. You're, for me and for, I think for, I can speak for Andy too. It's like, oh my gosh, God. How does this happen? How did you let this happen? This isn't supposed to happen, not to us. I thought we were cool with you, God. And then it's like, I don't know why. We always want to turn to God first. Like, somehow he causes everything, you know? So that was tough. And it took me a lot of like praying and going to God, like, what is going on? Like, I know you didn't cause this. I know you didn't mean this to happen, but this is a little baby. Like, how, you know, how could you let this happen? Yeah. So this is one of the first major, like, really shook Andy and up in our life. Like, you think life's going to go a certain way, and then something like this happens, and you're like, oh my gosh, okay. Life is not going to go how I expected. Definitely shakes up how you thought things were going to go.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain that, but yeah, it's like, all right, life's going to be a little different here. We've got a kid with special needs. It's going to be a little different raising him. It causes you to kind of, for me, I think I look around now and I see like a much more broken world than I ever realized. If it wasn't for him having that disability, I wouldn't have realized just how broken this world is. We go to a lot of hospitals with him and we see a lot of other kids who've got some crazy disabilities and problems down at Akron Children's. And you just realize like, oh my God, this is a broken, broken world. Evil world. It's a real sobering. I think for a lot of people who go through suffering, I'm realizing this, have a much more grasp of how reality really is. Because I think we go through life thinking, oh, I'm fine. I'm okay. Everything's okay. You know, not realizing like if you have a disability, you kind of realize like, oh, things are not okay. And you can't rely on yourself as much to think everything's good and you're okay. Definitely helps with compassion, realizing like, and it's not even Elliot, you know, I think I realize like, even in myself, I've got a lot of messed up things that I think I try to ignore, like, oh, I'm good, I'm okay. But then you realize like, no, we're all messed up, you know, it's just to varying degrees. So it really kind of sobers you up.
What do you got, Kevin? You falling asleep?
Do you mind if I ask you a question?
Go ahead, Kevin. You be the star of this Joe show. I guess we'll rename it this Kevin show.
What's life like now? No, never mind. Cut that.
Cut.
Cut. All right, you do it. I'm bad at this. I promise I'll throw a zinger in there.
Just be like short and to the point, you know, like, so talk about what's going on in your life right now.
So talk about what's going on in your life now, Eric.
Pew, 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 pew.
We had Ada.
She seems more challenging than Elliot in a lot of ways, though.
Yeah, she's I know, she's like almost advanced and I think she might be like a cleric sanguine. She's like, so yeah, she's like challenging and she's hitting her terrible twos and threes. I got like challenged, I think, you know, with a lot of the service ministries and stuff were going on and we had like a year or so of mourning, not mourning, I don't want to say, but like, oh my gosh, okay. You know, with Elliot, it really shakes you up. And it was hard. It was like, it took maybe a year for me to be like, okay, I could talk about it without crying or I want to say it was Todd challenged me to get involved with one of the ministries that was going on outside of our church. And it was True North. At the time, I was kind of thinking about it, but I was still feeling like a little overwhelmed with having little kids and stuff like that. I don't even know why, but it's like you start having kids and you do. You want to tribe out. You want to like build a castle around your family and protect them and take care of them and make sure they're all good. It's hard to imagine yourself going outside then and like loving up more people because you already feel kind of like just drained emotionally and I'm just tired.
Yeah.
But then he was like, why don't you get involved with True North? And I was already kind of thinking about it, but thinking like, maybe in another year or two. But he was like, yeah, do it now. I'm like, all right.
In another year or two.
Yeah. You know, maybe give me one more year to... Which was great advice, you know. I'm so thankful to be able to like be a part of it. I love it going down there with you guys and doing that. He really challenged me, and the point I want to make is that he was like, what are you going to do now? You got kids. You got to go out and love other people. You got to be an example for your kids. And Todd's big on that, and I was like, I totally am on the same. Like, I was like, yeah, I totally agree. I don't want to be the Christian who just loves his family and that's it, but I want my kids to see Andy and I go out and love other people and be like, this is what we're about. This is what we're going to do. Yeah, so I got involved with True North, and that was kind of scary at first going down to prison. Even though it's not really prison, it's juvenile detention, but it's essentially like prison. So I'm like, oh, guys, I'm going down to prison. Yeah, I'm into it. You know, it's like, it's cool. I've had a blast now. Like, I look forward to that every other Tuesday, going down to Dan Street with you guys and talking to these boys about Jesus. I look forward to it every week. Like, I'm excited.
I think the thing that I like most about it is, like, those guys are, like, the age that we were when we decided to make significant choices for God and for Jesus for ourselves. So it's like that's the age.
Yeah.
That like 16, 17, that's the age. And these guys they're in a precarious spot because they got busted. They're in jail. They're willing to hear, you know, life's not working out like it should have for you.
Yeah.
So they seem very receptive. So I'm with you. I love it too.
Yeah. There's quite a few of the boys that are like, you know, there's a few of them too. They're like, exactly. They say that same thing. They're like, I messed up. I got to change. I'm realizing something's wrong. And there's a few of them that you're like, they're super receptive to the gospel. And yeah, it's exciting to tell them about Jesus. And so I look forward to that. And then I tell my son, we pray for the boys all the time. He loves it. And we talk about the boys in jail. So I'm just realizing, like, I got to really fight against tribalism and trying to build a castle around our house. And I really want Andy and I to continue to, like, love other people outside the house. Try to be radical about it so that the kids get excited and want to be a part of it. We had my friend from work over for dinner, and the kids, they love it. They're so excited when we invite people over and we tell them beforehand, like, hey, we're trying to tell these people about Jesus and we're going to try to love them and have them over for dinner. And they, like, get pumped. They get excited. So it's kind of cool to see. And
yeah, that's awesome. I'm looking
forward to, like, keep trying to do that and get them involved and stuff like that. So
yeah, that's cool.
That's kind of where we're at now.
What do you hope for the future?
What do I hope for the future?
Yeah.
That's a good question. That's a tough question.
I ask the hard-hitting questions.
Yeah, you do. I don't know. We're hoping to buy a house, and I really want to buy a house that we can have people over and use it for ministry. I don't know. I'm excited for the future. I'm realizing more and more how much God loves me and cares about me, and I feel like he's got me in this position where I'm like, I'm really motivated to want to try to love other people and invite people to church and talk to them about Jesus. I don't know. I'm excited to see where our church is going to go. I feel like we're at this, like, brink of, like, something big or some going somewhere. We got the Howell Farm and the study center that might. So I don't know. I'm excited to see where God's going to take us. I don't know. If anything, I've learned anything is, like, I'm not going to try to make plans because I feel like he's always got different plans than I do. And just to try to be flexible and see what he's got in store. And I don't know. I'm 38 years old now, and I'm finally realizing that, like, he's got cool stuff in store. I've always got, I don't know, some messed up plans that I'm always trying to force that I need to, like, stop and just be like, all right, God, what do you got in store? I know it's going to be sweet, and just go with that, you know?
Kevin, you had a question.
When was the last time you looked at pornography? That should be like the snippet intro for the show.
And then just silence. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. This Joe Show is me, Joe, and I was joined on today's episode by Eric Schuess and Kevin Baker. This episode was recorded in March 2019 in a yellow house in Stowe, Ohio. Our intro music is Follow You by Semaphore, used under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 international license. Do you remember your own name? Do you remember how you owned them? From that day, there were moments from that year, recorded, written down. Let me look into your past. I will tell you who you are. We are the only ones who know what took place when you were born. Our closing song is The Keeper of Histories by Defy Them All, used under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 4.0 license. Both songs can be found at freemusicarchive.org.
That was fun. That was a fun year. With my blonde mullet coming out of my hat.
You really have a mullet?
Yeah, I did.
That's funny.
It was a white... Because I had super blonde hair.
It's like the most 90s thing of all time. Yeah. Brian Bosworth hair.